Hey, hope you're enjoying the Grave Talks. Each and every week, we're now giving you two brand new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. Today and every Wednesday, we're going to flash back to some of our favorite interviews of the past. To listen to our complete archive of episodes, along with commercial-free advanced episodes of the show, months before they're released to the public, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our show. It's only $5. You sign up now at patreon.com/thegravetalks or follow the links at thegravetalks.com. Today on The Grave Talks, the haunted Hillview Manor. Originally known as the Lawrence County Home for the Aged, or Poorhouse of the area, the history at the Hillview Manor is raw and living. What is now known as the haunted Hillview Manor, the residents of the past seem to still be roaming its halls. The property was a dumping ground in the first part of the 1900s for what our unenlightened society viewed as its outcasts. By today's standards, the practice would be completely unacceptable and inhumane. Everyone from criminals, orphaned children, to widows and the mentally ill lived together at the Hillview Manor. Many would find their final resting place on the grounds of Hillview, many of the deaths being questionable at best. It only makes sense that a facility once packed with distressed and abandoned living souls, that its walls would still echo that torment. In 1974, the Hillview Manor transitioned into a nursing care facility, and in 2004 finally closed its doors because of financial difficulties. It has since sat vacant of actual living tenants, until paranormal investigators were able to convince its current owners to open its doors for research and investigation into the accounts of ghostly activity in and around the ominous building. On today's episode of The Grave Talks, we talk with Rochelle Rosso and Jim Backus, the foremost investigators of the haunted Hillview Manor. We hear the story of its ghosts, spirits, and why they choose to haunt the Hillview. Were these spirits once residents of its historic building, or have they arrived to the party after the living left? We'll also examine what the future may hold for the Hillview Manor as time continues to move forward.
As far as the history is concerned, before Hillview even was a, you know, existed, the property itself was just, it was just empty lot. I mean, beautiful view. I think that's why they chose the location. It's because before all the trees and the developments and everything went up, you had a really pretty view from a far distance of the woods and everything. So that's why they named it Hillview Manor, I believe.
And we're up on a little hill.
Yeah, it's like on top of a hill. But it was, I know that Newcastle itself was prominent Indian territory, and I think it housed like the Shenango, the Delaware, the Iroquois, the Lenape, different Indian tribes. We don't believe that this was built over any type of Indian burial ground or anything, but we have had people from the neighboring development tell us that they've seen what looked like Indians walking across the property in the back. I don't know, because none of these tribes wore headdresses, and they said that these they saw had headdresses. So, I mean, sometimes you can't always believe what, you know, people tell you.
What was the original reason for construction of the building?
It was, go ahead, Jim.
It opened up in 1926 as a Lawrence County Home for the Poor. And it was basically used to house a whole different group of people who couldn't live for themselves or take care of themselves, or people who were released from prison, or, you know, unwed mothers, people like that didn't have anywhere to go.
What was its lifespan as the what society called the poorhouse at that time?
It was a poor farm from 1926 to 1976, and then in 77 it turned over into Hillview Manor, which was the nursing home setting for like extended care, and that closed in 2004.
What was life like for the residents in that period of time at the Hillview Manor, or at that point, the Lawrence County Home for the Aged?
if they lived here, they had to work here. They had a farm, so they had farm animals, they had crops. So people had to take care of the crops and the animals. If like the kitchen area, for instance, they had to work in the kitchen. They had to do things. So if you lived here, you had to work here. It was basically self-sustained. I guess the conditions were really good back then, but yet, you know, these people were poor. They didn't have any money. The state funded them. They did to make extra money here and there.
There's a lot of negligence here also, for real.
I mean, we don't have proof of it, but a lot of rumor behind the negligence, especially when we found one of the ledgers of the burials in the cemetery out back. Most of the people buried back there aren't even from the poor farm. They're from Lawrence County, so it's hard to tell exactly how many are back there because the ledger only has like approximately 400 people buried. And that was just from the 30s to the 50s. And some of the people from the poor farm that were listed in that, being buried in the cemetery, died from fractured skulls just a couple days after they got here, which we very suspicious because, you know, if you're coming here, this was supposed to be a safe haven for people that didn't have homes. Why is it that these people are dying from fractured skulls a couple days later? So as far as the conditions, I mean, that was meant to be a great place for people, but yet some of the records and things that we have found that were left behind suggest otherwise.
The practices that went on within those walls, obviously we're talking about a great deal of time ago, probably not many records that would exist to show what occurred, and any accounts would be many generations old. Can you speak to any of that? Can you speak to any of what may have been going on based on the rumors or the stories that you're...
Yeah, sadly, we have nothing really to go on as far as when it was the poor farm because it was so long ago and records were just gone, you know, but...
When you hear stories about other buildings like ours and... a lot of that history isn't very good, but a lot of it is hearsay because there aren't a lot of records that exist from that time. But when so many different places have the same kind of histories, I think you are thinking, okay, maybe there's something to this. And that history, you know, is basically these people, you know, were here without anybody knowing who they were and everybody working here. If you had somebody that weren't wasn't in his right mind, maybe just figured I can do whatever I want and get away with it, and you know, no. So
experimentation, I believe that.
Yeah, I think that's just.
Well, we do have one story about that that we heard. We had someone here filming to do like a documentary, and they did research on this location in New York, and it was about vaccinations on children, and that they were experimenting these vaccinations with the children by pumping them full of vaccinations until either they died, got sick. You know, or they were trying to figure out what the vaccinations did, if they gave him so many doses or, and when he was researching this, Lawrence County home in Newcastle, Pennsylvania, I don't know if it was Newcastle or Lawrence County, but it came through on the records that they were doing these experimentations on children here too.
Eventually the 70s come about and it is turned strictly into a nursing care facility. What was it like there at that time for that window?
You know, it's hard to say that because
we do
there's
get a lot
so
of
many
guests.
People still that work there, yeah. That listen to our stuff and they'll claim that it was wonderful. But we've spoken to other people that said that their family members were here and they were not treated very well.
I had a guest here today, actually, who... her grandmother lived here and she was here all the time with her. And she was like, yeah, we used to go down to that room and eat lunch in that room to do crafts in. And that tells us a lot of, you know, history too, that we wouldn't know unless they would, you know, they told us. So we get to pass that information on. But, according to her, it was great.
Yeah. That was more, I think, towards, she said 20 years ago.
Yeah, it would have been the late 90s before they closed.
Once the nursing facility closed its doors, what happened with the building at that point?
Well, it closed due to the fact that it was falling apart already and the county didn't want to do anything with it. So they put it up for auction And the owners that have it now have owned it since they put it up for auction because they want it. It was actually the mother of the people that own it now wanted it at auction. And then she passed away soon after, and it was left to her children, which I guess I would say real estate. They buy property and turning them in, you know, turn it into apartments.
They originally wanted to make an apartment, and it just, they couldn't do that with the damage it was done to the building. It cost way too much money.
And the damage, not only because there was disrepair when they left, the county left it, but also because shortly after it was purchased at auction, people came in truckloads. And no one called the police because they just figured it was just sold. You know, they're doing work on it. And these people were in here with bagged lunches stealing the copper. You know, that's how comfortable they were. They were bringing lunches in. They were stealing the copper and wiring and pipes and stuff out of the building, which catastrophic to the building. So they kind of just left it sit here for a while, and someone approached them about doing investigations here because of all of the rumors that we had heard, you know, from the employees that lived here or worked here, you know, told us that it was haunted when they worked here.
Paint us a better picture of what the building physically looks like.
It's approximately 83,000 square feet.
There's two wings and two floors, and then a third floor, which is basically the center of the building.
It's laid out kind of like a goalpost, the old portion of the building. I always forget, and we know that how many rooms are in this place, and still I cannot remember for the life of how many rooms. Prior to them building One North, I think One North added probably around 20 rooms, I would say, maybe a little bit more.
Yeah.
But prior to that, probably about 8 rooms on each wing, 2 wings, and then several on the third floor.
Close to 50 rooms, probably.
Yeah.
Tell me more about the first reported hauntings or hauntings that anyone had knowledge of within the confines of the Hillview Manor.
We don't have a lot of stories as far as hauntings when it was a poor farm because most of those people have passed away and we really don't get anyone here telling us stories. but the employees, I'd say earliest hauntings were...
Jeffrey.
Jeffrey's probably the biggest one. Jeffrey, we don't know exactly for sure who Jeffrey is. We get a lot of EVPs from him. But the nursing staff said that they would see a little boy all the time, like patients would. And within a couple of days from a patient claiming that he saw this little boy that passed away. And that was very common throughout Hillview. And if you ask, you know, we've talked to nurses, doctors that have worked here, and they all said, you know, that's true. That happened. And then we also have some nurses' records, like just like notes they take on patients, like daily schedules and, you know, how the patients were reacting that day. And there's a couple of our paperworks that say that they saw a little boy. I mean, like one woman even said she saw children playing outside of a room when there was no one there, and that these children would come flat. I don't understand what this means, but would come through her window flat, almost like they were seeping into the room.
Creepy.
Yeah, it's creepy. But Jeffrey, we got a lot of EVPs in a room from a little boy that says his name's Jeffrey. And it is one of the rooms where one of the patients claimed they saw him and then passed away. And they explained him as having a ball cap and knickers on, which we're believing, you know, put him back in the 20s and 30s. And then we get, Babe Ruth.
Babe Ruth.
So we dubbed that Jeffrey's room. That may have been his room at one time.
Are there any more stories about what went on in terms of unexplained activity while it was a nursing care facility?
I know that my neighbor told us that, like, on the third floor, a lot of people hated work on the third floor and the west wing on the second floor because of sounds and things they would hear and see. It was somebody in a wheelchair. They saw someone in a wheelchair on the third floor. And we're thinking, well, everybody should be in bed. How would somebody get out and get into a wheelchair by themselves? And when they went to go check, there was no one there. So they saw the wheelchair, but then when they got up to go look and see who it was, they were gone. shadows. I remember one woman telling me, this was also on the third floor, that she saw a shadow peek up over the nurse's station, like a child-sized shadow. And she was, same thing, wondering how a child got up onto the third floor. And when she walked around the side of the nurse's station, there was no one there. I don't think there were a whole lot of children here. I mean, we had children.
That's the thing, is we don't know.
Yeah.
We found out about, you know, we never knew why we'd see so many kids here. And then all of a sudden we find out possibly about the experimenting with vaccinations here. You know, so that just changes the whole thing.
Yeah.
There probably were a lot of kids here if they were actually doing that. And there's only a handful of places that were. So, I mean, I'm guessing there are more kids here than we think.
Tell me about your involvement with the facility. How did you become involved? How did you become intrigued enough to get to the level of connection with this building that you are today?
I was drawn to this place every time I'd go past it. From the time it closed down, I was like, I want to know how to get into that building. And I drove around back one time looking for like a phone number or something, and all I found was a grass cutting number, like somebody that took care of the lawn. So I called that. They directed me to the owners, which lived in some near Pittsburgh, and I finally contacted them, and one of the owners met me here and walked me through the building. Now at the time, we weren't interested in running investigations out of the place. We just wanted to investigate it, you know, our group, just get in here and experience the place. Well, he was like, we need to get a hold of our lawyers. We need to find out about, you know, insurance purposes and having people in there. They didn't even, at the time, he didn't even believe in the paranormal stuff. So it was very odd for him, and I don't think he really cared much to let us in. And then another group approached them and offered them money, you know, to lease the building. And of course, because they weren't doing anything with the building and it was just sitting here, they figured, okay, well, we can make some money off of it. Now, the group that, you know, that started here, when they leased it, called me immediately to let me know, hey, we're going to start running investigations. And we just started booking investigations here as a group. So we were here at least once a month for the first several years. And then in 2013, some things went bad, and they asked me to start managing it, which I did, and I've been here since.
Take me back to some of the first experiences or encounters that you had with the building that made you realize, okay, there's something more going on here than just kind of being drawn or intrigued by the creepiness of the large, empty facility, but something that actually confirmed to you that, yes, this is indeed a haunted building.
Oh, wow. It's been so long, and we've experienced so much since then. I'd have to say the shadows that we used to see here probably is what got me. That's probably what really grabbed my attention, because the shadow play, like if you're just sitting in one of the hallways, especially one north, and you're watching down the hallway, you see shadows crossing over back and forth, like... The creepiest one was when it came straight up the hallway at a group of us. I mean, we all watched it. And I think that was my first experience here, is watching that shadow come up the middle of the floor. And I mean, since then, numerous things have happened. I mean, Jim, how long ago was it you started coming here?
Well, I first saw it, I live about 30 minutes away, but I first saw it on, the ghost shows, Ghost Adventures and Ghost Hunters, and that was back in 2010, and then my group came here in 2011, so I've been coming here since August of 2011, and my first night here, I got this awesome mist form in one of the rooms on my camera, like on my video camera, and it made me want to come back here every day after that. So, and when I met Rochelle, and when like a month after she took over, she let me come and start volunteering to be the tour guide and help out around here, and been doing it ever since. So,
let's talk about some of the first investigations, not just experiences, but when you actually were actively seeking out evidence of the paranormal at the building. What were some of the first pieces that you found at the Hillview Manor?
I'd say the one on the second floor has to be my favorite, was down Jeffrey's hallway, and you were there, and we had two other people witness this. We're watching down a hallway. It's at night, of course, And out of one of the bathrooms, a shadow, it looks like it crawled. It's so hard to explain unless you're like explaining with your hands, you know, but it crawled out of the top of the door onto the ceiling, come towards us probably a couple feet, and then crawled down the wall onto the floor and towards us. And then I'd say probably about 5-10 feet in front of us, it turned into what looked like a black mist, and then it just like wafted in front of us like smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have reached out and touched it. And one of the women that were with us was her very first investigation ever, so she was bawling, like begging us to get the hell out of here. She kept going, please, let's just go. And of course, the three of us have been doing this a long time. And we're like, no, we're staying. And we're like trying to comfort her, but watch what's going on at the same time. And my feeling was that it was threatening. It was trying to like scare us away.
Yeah.
And we didn't scare, so it just gave up and left.
It just dissipated, yeah.
What did you think was going on at that moment in time? Were you feeling that this was some sort of dark entity, or were you thinking this was a former resident of the facility? What was going through your mind as this was occurring?
I wasn't a former resident. I didn't feel like it.
No. I mean, we at first, like we said, we were freaked out, definitely, but we didn't leave, so I think it just...
Yeah, I think normally if we were scared, we would have left, taken off.
It wasn't that off-putting, but...
It was...
Interesting.
Definitely interesting. I've never thought about it until you asked that, like, if it was a former resident. Like, what was it? I don't know. I never even considered that.
But the crawling on the ceiling thing is such a common occurrence here, too. I've seen it so many different times, and we don't know why. But we always say if we go, if we can climb on walls and scare people, of course, we're probably going to.
Yeah, once we pass over, we're going to do that. I'd be hanging on people's backs.
What seems to be very interesting about the Hillview Manor is its proximity to many other haunted locations or areas that have reported paranormal activity. That's true, correct?
Well, this is just a home. I'm just right down the road from Hillview. The woman that lived there actually ran the, I think, Mary Evans Center, which is, it's like right next to the hospital in Elwood City, which is down the road. But she took care of babies. Mary Evans Center, was just a birthing place for mothers to go to have children. And the woman started by doing these in her house, like being like an, I guess, what are they called? Nursemaids? Or I'm not sure.
What, nurse?
No, they help people, you know, give birth and stuff. But she started it from her house.
Midwife?
Midwife, maybe, yeah. But her daughters would watch two women walk through the wall. They looked like sisters, but they would walk through the wall at her house all the time. And then they come to find out that there was an entryway there. There was a doorway in that wall at one time that was built in. But we don't have that here.
Now, we've talked about several entities now in the building, including a little boy and some others. Can you tell me any more about other very distinct experiences and haunting encounters that you've had at the facility?
A lot of the people that we talk about are actually facts, you know, facts. The people we know that did live here.
We have like four or five that we talk about on the tour.
That we have facts on.
Yeah, we have facts on.
And one would be Mary Virginia, which she was an older woman that had cerebral palsy and was in a home her entire life. And she acted like a child. And she has several baby dolls and costume jewelry and stuff in her room. We have a man by the name of Eli Sari that passed away in the boiler room down the hall. He died from intoxication and exposure. He got drunk one night, passed out outside of the building, and two of the other inmates found him, which they called them inmates when it was the poor farm. And they took him down there to sober up, and he ended up dying. And then we have George from the boiler room down in the new portion of the basement, the new boiler room. We don't know exactly who he could have been, but we get a lot of EVPs from him. And he absolutely loves the Steelers, loves the football team. Doesn't like it when you talk about another team, so he'll get angry. We have Jimmy Marker, which he's probably the most popular one in the building. He was here from the time it was a poor farm until Hillview closed in 2004. He was just a character. I mean, I guess his family lived right down the road, and they put him in this home because he was hard to take care of because of his disabilities. And he was just fun. I mean, everybody says that he was just a hoot. One of the things he would do would take all of his clothes off in the elevator and then just take off running, and they'd have to catch him or find him. Like, sometimes I'd catch him in the elevator getting naked, and sometimes they'd just find his clothes and have to, like, go out looking for him.
What sort of interactions have you had with George in terms of him being a spirit? Is he still as jovial, for lack of a better term, and fun-loving as he seemed to have been in life?
We get a lot of EVPs from him, and it's usually his name, and he talks to us, you know, like, he'll say hello. My favorite one was several years ago. I said, "Hi, my name's Rochelle. It's nice to meet you." And you hear on it, "It's nice to meet you." I can't remember what else. I had "I love you" before, and I don't know if it was from him, but we were talking to him. Oh, so many. There's just so many. They get garbled up in your mind. Oh, the one EVP, though, like, we got interaction with George in the basement. Jim has really some kind of weird connection with the basement and George.
Yeah, one of the best EVPs I got here was in the basement, and it was, well, it was actually two of my best EVPs in one recording. I said something about the Steelers season starting, and the recording says, "Yes, I'm happy for the football season." And I was so happy about hearing that I didn't go very much further ahead to listen to the rest of the recording. Well, on that same recording, I get "Jim, be careful, danger." And that turned out to be the better one, because that kind of freaked me out, you know, telling me, you know, to be careful. So there's some kind of danger. I just don't know what. And I actually got that same recording a couple times throughout the years. And it's still, nothing stops me from going down there. I'm more drawn to it than afraid of it, I guess.
It's almost like it knows something, or is trying to warn you or protect you from whatever may be down there. Do you ever find that the spirits are interacting with one another, that they are able to communicate back and forth on their side?
Yeah, oh, yeah. We have a couple recordings, actually, where they were, like, talking to each other. Like, we would ask a question, and you would hear us ask a question, and then you would hear, like, two different voices going, "You go. No, you go."
Yeah.
Like, they are. I definitely believe they are.
Like, you'll hear them say, "I think... Wait, they're here.
They're here. I think they can hear us," or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, like, they will communicate to each other. And it's not just through EVP. We hear it with our voices. And just before you called, Jim was sitting in a chair. He goes, "I hear a couple women talking to each other." That's very common to hear women. And I think it's because we're in the office area. And it may have been, like, just residual energy that's left behind from, like, maybe the staff that worked in here, or they come back here and, you know, they're talking or watching what we're doing.
Clearly you've had a lot of activity there, EVPs, seeing shadows, a plethora of things. What other signs have been given to you at that building that show you that there is something else going on other than human activity within its walls?
During investigations, we use different techniques, such as other pieces of equipment, meters, flashlights. We ask them to turn them on and off for us. Knocking, you know, just ask them to make noises for us, specific whistling. So there's definitely different ways that they communicate to let us know. I mean, I heard a door slam when I was the only one in a building the other day, and it was so loud, like, I thought, you know, Rochelle came in or something, but there was nobody there. I don't know what door closed or not.
There was no one in the building.
Yeah, it was just loud. It was a door closing, and it was, yeah, there's definitely more than just EVPs.
It was, yeah, more than just equipment, period. I mean, as far as physical.
Yeah.
like I was sleeping on the couch in the break room one time and watching TV, and I fell asleep, and I felt the blanket being tucked up around my neck, which kind of woke me up, and no one else was in here, and the TV shut off, and that kind of like it didn't freak me out. Actually, it was kind of comforting. But then you think, whoa, you know, why? And then of course our instinct is being investigators to find the logical explanation. And you're thinking, okay, well, the TV's on a timer. No, it wasn't. It wasn't on a timer. Maybe I pulled the blanket up. It's just weird. But then you start to have more occurrences very similar to that. And you're starting to realize, hey, that wasn't me. That you always second guess what you're experiencing. You know, that's why I don't like experiencing anything alone. I was tapped on the arm down at the end of One North one time, four times, pretty hard. And, you know, I had a winter coat on because it was cold. And everybody heard it. You know, they heard the taps on my arm and saw my reaction. I actually turned around and yelled at the group, did you just touch me? And they were probably a good, 10 feet behind me. Maybe, yeah.
Lots of different things.
Yeah, I mean, the interactions, you get whispered to. Like, I've had my name whispered in my ear.
Earlier, you had mentioned the warning about being in the basement. Have you ever felt like there's anything in the facility that is dark, is ominous, maybe something beyond our world? How dark do you think it gets?
Sort of.
Yeah.
When you say dark entities, I don't think they're like demonic or anything. I think they were just spirits that were not good people.
Yeah.
One of them is above us, in the hallway that's above us. You just, when you walk through those areas, you get really,
heavy feeling.
Yeah. You get a heavy feeling. It's almost like you feel threatened a little bit, or like you're being, it's hard to explain. It's just a heavy feeling. And I don't know if it maybe was someone that worked here.
We don't know. That's the thing.
Yeah, we just don't know who it was, but it's obvious that it's there, and we're not the only ones. We don't even have to tell people about it. And as soon as you walk into that area, other people are saying the same thing. And there's so many times that, you know, we're the only ones in the building, like right now. You know, we're here to do the interview after a tour, so no one else is in the building. It's locked up. And there'll be times that we're hearing banging coming from upstairs. It'll sound like doors slamming or furniture moving or somebody stomping their feet or walking. And, you know, that could be happening all over the building, but we're only hearing it because it's right above us. Well, there's just so many things. It's just so crazy. Like Kelly, for instance, she went to go get water a couple weeks ago, and she was in the exact same area Jim was when he heard the door slam. And she heard what sounded like a big, heavy, something dropping. And then it sounded like somebody was dragging something. And she thought the same thing, that I came in and I wasn't here yet.
We blame her for everything.
Yeah, they blame me for everything. And that it's because that we like to scare each other a lot. Like, we'll hide and wait for somebody to come around the corner and jump out or sneak in and scare each other. But the one thing we don't, you know, we might scare each other, but we always tell each other that it was us. You know, so that, because we don't want activity, you know, there's no reason to fool each other or fool anybody for that matter, because this building speaks for itself. It's haunted. It's extremely haunted.
Doing your due diligence is good. Obviously, you want to be able to debunk anything that may not be paranormal and may just be something naturally occurring within the building. Have you ever had anything like that where it was something that you thought, oh my goodness, this is going to be amazing evidence, and then it turns out it really was something very explainable?
Sadly, a lot of people that come here do send us a lot of their quote-unquote evidence, and we have to be the one to tell them, I'm sorry, no, that's not what you think it is. Like, we can explain it to them, because they don't remember, like, maybe something that's, you know, decoration on a building or something. We know about it because we know the building so well, but then they think, you know, they're only here one time, so they don't remember, you know, that was a statue or something. They think, so we have to be the one to tell them.
Oh, well, not a statue, but it was like, it was one of those ornaments
on the roof.
I'm just
saying, in general.
Yeah. Things that we think, oh, there was a really good one. The group came down to get me one night because they heard talking in one of the stairwells. And this is really cool, actually, because it had me fooled for a couple minutes. I walked down there with them, and the stairwell goes from the basement to the second floor. And I'm standing on the first floor listening, and I'm like, wow, that does sound like talking. And then I went down to the basement in the same area, and I'm like, I'm still hearing it down here. So then I went all the way up to the second floor, and I'm still hearing it. And I said, something's not right here. So I put my head up against the block wall, and it's coming from the wall. And it sounds like whispering, like you couldn't make out words or anything. Here we have a tree outside, a big pine tree, and it was a little bit windy, and that one of the branches were just brushing right along the top of that wall and echoing down through the core of the block. And it sounded like talking. It sounded like whispering.
Speaking solely in terms of the Hillview, why do you think the spirits still choose to reside there in haunted halls?
That's probably one of the most common questions that are asked. We were asked that today. And I mean, I've been investigating for 17 years, and I wish I could give you an answer. There's theories, of course, but I have never, there are no exact answers. I mean, we may never have them, and we probably aren't supposed to have them, but it doesn't stop us from trying.
I mean, the fact is, if we know that how many deaths were actually in the building, and if every single death was still here, stuck, or something like that, we'd always have activity. Like, there'd never be any quiet time.
Yeah.
So that tells me, or gives me the idea of, okay, not everybody stays, or there is some specific reason that we just don't know yet. So, that's the way I'm leaning.
I mean, it could go anywhere from somebody stuck here as a punishment. They're stuck here because they don't know how to leave, or they're punishing themselves.
Or they were given the choice and they chose to stay.
Yeah, or they given a choice to stay. There's so many reasons it could be, you know. And then if you could get so much deeper into that as far as religions go, and you know, as far as like purgatory, is purgatory on earth? Is we have no clue. I wish we knew.
What are your hopes for the future of the haunted Hillview Manor 10, 15 years from now?
Still standing.
I see, still standing. Exactly. I mean, since it closed down, of course, there wasn't a whole lot of work done to it. And it is in disrepair. It's in bad disrepair. Mainly because of the leaks. The leaks on the roof are getting ridiculous. It was a flat top roof, the tar on the roof, and it's cracking. And the owner just put a new portion on over the chapel area. And that was a small fortune, let's just say that. And that doesn't even, that's just like one 20th of the building. Yeah. Buildings, or maybe even less than that. So she's going to try to put like a new portion on every year. And we're talking like anywhere between probably $15,000 and $20,000 a year just on one small portion of the roof. So, I mean, a lot of people think, you got to be making a killing up there. You got to be making all kinds of money up there. No, that is not the case. We're barely floating. You know, it's hard to keep a building like this going. And especially when you have to do major things like that to the building, you know, like putting on a new roof. And luckily we have at least 20 staff members that are volunteers. We call them staff. All of them are volunteers, and they come in. We come in constantly clean, take care of, you know, we clean the walls. We scrape walls, get the loose paint off, sweep. I mean, we're hauling out things. We're breaking our backs.
We do stuff we can do because we can't fix roofs, and we can't, you know, fix construction. We can.
There's no putting, you know, we can't paint rooms because there's no heat. There's no air conditioning. It's not temperature controlled. There's a lot of moisture in the building from the leaks. I mean, once we get that roof fixed, we might be able to start doing those things. But then you're looking at trying to heat the building, and, you know, that's never going to happen. That's just too much money. I don't want it torn down. If for any reason, the paranormal community goes under, you know, and people just lose complete interest in it, or somebody figures out what exactly paranormal activity is, and it just goes down. I would love to see this building stay where it is, because it's not just about the ghosts and the spirits here. The building itself is, it's a home to a lot of us. You know, the people that investigate here, we have people that come every month. It's their home too, as well as ours. The building, it's almost like the building is alive.
To find out more about the Haunted Hillview Manor, you can visit their website at hauntedhillviewmanor.com. That's going to wrap up today's episode of The Grave Talks. If you like our program, please press subscribe on whatever platform it is you listen to us on. Leave us a positive review. Share it with your friends. That's what helps this show grow in the rankings and lets other folks know that we exist. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.